Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello everyone, it's time once again for Insane in the Fembrain.
Fembrain.
Hello, Rich Wilson here. I hope you're doing okay, I hope you're doing well. Wonderful weather at the moment. I don't know if this will be the same as when you receive this, but it's lovely at the moment. Hot, beautiful, very nice. Things seem to be returning back to normal. Who knows? Will it be normal? Who knows? Yeah, I hope you're doing all right, though. My guest this week was the fantastic Sophie Willen. I've worked with Sophie before. She's a good friend of Jade Adams. So she's a colleague of mine and a mate of mine, and we've hung out. And I didn't really know much about Sophie. I kind of knew about her upbringing. I know she'd had a tough time with her mum being a drug addict, and we talked about that in the episode, what that would feel like. Because that's not my experience of life. So it's nice to talk to someone that to find out what that would be like, you know. And she's actually turned it into a sitcom called Alma's Not Normal, which is based on her own experiences. And I've seen the pilot, which is absolutely brilliant. And when it comes out, it's going to blow your mind. It's absolutely superb. She's a cracking writer. It's going to be really good fun. So without further ado, Sophie Willen, congratulations on your sitcom, mate.
Thank you.
Is it?
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's,
is it called a sitcom?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really pleased because, you know, I got the news when we got into lockdown. So, you know, again, I feel really lucky that I had that focus and the work because, you know, I'm sure you and Jade understand that, you know, when you're a creative person and you're out and about and you've got a lot of, well, you could call it manic energy, but there's a creative energy there.
Yeah.
You need to be doing something and need focuses. Otherwise, it can just drive you mad, can't it? So I felt lucky that I've had a focus, you know, and actually can treat this as a kind of undistracted writing time, really.
Yeah, same with Jade. Jade's got her, she's got a script she's working on.
Yeah.
And it came at the right time,
it's exciting.
You know. Yeah, it's exciting. It's funny. It's funny to see. It's like be on the outside of it watching. Because we all love sitcoms, we all love TV and, you know, movies and things like that. But it's you don't get to see where they come from very often.
Yeah.
Or most people don't get to see that. So it's interesting to see with Jane. I don't know if it's the same with you, but she's got someone that's they're not even writing the script yet. They're actually talking about the world that the script will live in. So all the characters and things like that. So is that the same with you?
Yeah, definitely. So especially when it's like semi-autobiographical, which I think from what Jade told me, I think hers is as well, it's quite tricky because you're having to think of all these experiences and all of these, especially if it's retrospective, and then pin them down to one specific time, place and moment almost in your background and pin it all in one place because it could actually sit anywhere. When the options are unlimited, you know, that's when it's actually getting specific with it. And also when it's based on people and you're changing them into fictional characters, you know, all them decisions about, you know, what part of people's character do you take forward and which parts of it do you let go and what do you let become fictional? What else do you bring in that's new? You know, so that takes quite a lot of planning, really. And once you've got that, obviously you can write your pilot, which then sets the tone for the series. But that initial planning of the world, I think, is the most delicate bit, really, and takes a while to get right, you know.
Yeah, and are you finding it, because it's, like you say, it's autobiographical or semi-autobiographical, so are you finding it, Are you finding it? How are you finding it mentally to go back and revisit things? And are you finding it all right? Or
I'm always all right with that because I did it in theatre shows as well. But I think over time, and then stand up shows. But I think over time, I've had to acknowledge that it's a lot more full on than you ever give it credit for. Because yeah. I think people used to say, you know, you do Q&As after shows. I did them a lot with theatre. It was part of the thing, you know. And they'd say, oh, it must be therapeutic for your cathartic. And I used to get a bit of a hump with that. I used to find it a bit, you know, I'm not doing my therapy on stage, I'd be thinking, yeah. you know. And I thought, actually, that's okay that they ask that and feel that, because there is some catharsis in expressing and sharing where you're coming from in your unusual circumstances with people. And also, when you are doing the writing, even if you've been for therapy, it is another sort of therapeutic process. It is. And I think a lot of it's about wanting to explain who and where you're coming from with the world when you feel a bit of an outsider, which I think is obviously with a lot of comedians. Yeah. You know, you're trying to explain yourself, I think, in some way. So I think there's something quite therapeutic, but then also can be quite emotionally draining, can't it? Which is why I yeah. think, God, thank God I write comedy, because I do not know how people write autobiographical stuff that doesn't have a joke. Because if you're not making yourself laugh with it, I mean, God, it's just, I don't know. It's amazing that people can write dramas, yeah. I think, that are solely drama without getting the endorphins from a laugh or whatever, you know.
Well, I was talking to actor Nicholas Pinnock a couple of weeks ago. And he
all
was,
right. yeah,
like, we were talking, he's been in Top Boy and Captain America
oh,
and things
fabulous.
Like that.
Oh, fabulous. Oh, I loved Top Boy. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Really good television. But that he did a short film called Closer that I watched. It's on YouTube, and it's really powerful. Right. And I said to him, "How do you feel about? How do you shake off the character after? Because it's so into you. How do you shake it off?" And he said, "It's really difficult, and it changes your, because your body doesn't know that you're acting. So you know, so when they're doing these dramas, it really gets in. And so, like you say, doing it without having a laugh." Or, you know, sort of, no, I suppose it's different doing a drama than a sitcom, maybe. I don't really know, but it's still going to affect you. And what I love about you is seeing your show at the Soho Theatre, which was inspirational to me, like I said to you later on, because you were talking about your past life as a sex worker and things like that, and you were you were so at ease with it and telling the story. And that's why I went, oh, my God, I can tell my story. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and you sound like you've got your head around it to a place where you feel comfortable.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It's really inspiring.
I mean, I think I'm always interested in... Oh, thank you, Rich. That's lovely. I think I'm always interested in what the political themes behind it are. So obviously with that, it was about, you know, the judgment and feminism being dominated by middle-class women who set the ideals for everybody based on what's been possible for them.
Yeah.
And that actually fed into... You know, when these group of feminists that I was working with at a period of time had been quite harshly judging of the escorting. So that was a good way of talking about it. And then I'd written up like a kind of political, different opinions on it, really. So, you know, is it sexually empowering? A whole bit on my thoughts on that. Is it economically empowering? What do I think about that? And, you know, what do people say? Why do we feel it's okay to psychoanalyze sex workers to the extent that we do? You know, so I'd written all the political points. And then turn them into a matter-of-fact kind of anecdotal conversation like you might do with someone in the pub, and then it becomes stand-up. But I think knowing your political points as well makes you feel a bit more kind of safe with it as well, because you know what your objective is. You're sharing within a space that's structured. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not as confessional as it is. The structure of it and the fact that you're driving towards a bigger point is what makes it feel like a safe and at ease thing to do, you know.
That was great. It was because honestly, because I said to you in my story about having a thing with another fella, and I didn't, it wasn't shame, I just didn't think it was funny. And then when I watched you do yours, I'm like, oh no, I could, and I started telling it, and now it's one of my best bits. Like, people really fucking laugh. And There's a lot of talk about escorts and sex, people in the sex industry, and there's always this other people that aren't in it. I know other people that have. I knew someone else that she was a prostitute, and her husband used to drive her to the jobs, like to the clients, And and she did it because
everyone needs a driver, don't they?
Well, this is it. And she wanted to do it. It wasn't like they wanted to do it. There's this assumption that a lot of people that do that sort of work are being forced to, or, you know, they're forced into it. And sometimes it's not the case. I don't know. Was that the same with you? Did you didn't have an option? You just kind of went, well, I'll just do this for a bit.
I think it's just like really nuanced, isn't it? I mean, it's as much of a choice as there are mitigating circumstances, you know. And, you know, as I said in that section, really, it says empowering as it is disempowering. I personally think in reflection now, you know, it was very economically empowering. You know, as I say in my stand-up, I get to pick my own hours, say what I will and won't do. You don't get that luxury working in Subway, you know. But then at the same time, was it sexually empowering? Probably not, you know, if you look at it for me at that time. But, you know, it was very performative. And there is this expectation that escorts have to hide away. They don't tell anyone. There's a big taboo. Then when they do tell people, they have to do like a big coming out party and, you know, I'm sexually empowered, I'm this, I'm that. And it's like, well, actually, this need to categorise people in demon or victim or hero or whatever is, you know, putting people in these very rigid singular boxes, which is what that whole show was about, really. It doesn't fit. You know, you can be both, you know, empowered and disempowered by something. You can be both working class and aspirationally middle. You can be, you know, which is what the show is about. You can be northern and never lived down south. I mean, people don't fit now, I don't think, into one very neat little package. You know, so I think for me, I wouldn't want to die on any hill, really, because I think it could be a mixture of choice and circumstances. And you know.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, it's having these conversations with people through the podcast, I start to realise that people are more fluid, like you just said. You know, they are. They don't fit into boxes like they used to. And it's we're not. This is why I have a. I see everyone arguing with each other, and I'm like, would you be a bit more? We need more empathy, don't we? More rather than
we really do. You know, it gets very tribal, doesn't it? And you know, what you believe has to mean a whole identity now. If you have one belief system, it has to fit as part of a big identity. And actually, not always the case, is it?
No, so I knew someone that was she was a ring girl for the boxing, and so you know, doing like like she'd walk around the ring and saying what round it was, and then all that got when it all kicked off, and a lot of feminists were going, that's outrageous, making women do this and the other. She was really upset because she's like, I really like doing it. I get paid really well. I like doing it, and now I can't do it because someone else said I can't do it, and it's. And so she was, and no one's having those conversations. It's just like, oh, they're being made to do this.
And
they're
who's
being,
speaking on behalf of these people who are, you know, to me, that's what I was, you know, my thing was about the idea that, you know, you've got the feminist environments are dominated by women from good backgrounds, middle-class backgrounds, who are setting ideals for everybody. And actually, they're not in those positions themselves. So why are they setting the rules and ideals and structures and... So I think that's something, isn't it? You know, who's saying who can do what when, you know?
Yeah, well, they can afford, they have that luxury, don't they? They can afford to spend this time setting out the rules and getting into arguments and fighting the fight and all that. Whereas a lot of people, like working class people, just don't, like you speak to a lot of working class people, it's not because they're stupid, they just don't have, they've got time. They're like, I've got kids to feed, I've got a roof to keep over my head. I ain't got time to fuck about with that. It's not because I don't care, I just don't have time. And that's the difference, isn't it? And you know, and that's your sitcom, didn't you? You won the Carolina Hearn bursary. Is that where this started?
Yeah, that's where it came from. Well, I'd done Edinburgh before that, and I'd had tried to get a script off the go for a while before I'd met a producer in Salford called Rebecca Papworth. I'd gone flying all the producers at Media City. And there was one woman there who, you know, small northern woman, and she obviously related to me. We got on and she gave me a script commission. I've said before in previous things that, you know, that diversity is what you need from the gatekeepers, isn't it? Because they are the ones who will pick things that they relate to, because it is subjective comedy and culture, isn't it? You know, so it's like if everybody's from Eton, then that's not going to help get a diverse, authentic range of work, is it? It's never going to quite fit, you know. But I was lucky, I met her. Couldn't get it past her, though,
The
bigger gatekeepers. Yeah, they kind of, as soon as it went to London, you know, I think one commissioner, below commissioner, said, oh, no, we wouldn't take that to commissioner because female heroin addicts are quite frightening, not funny, and we don't think it would be funny. I know, and I think, well, of course, because, you know, he'd never met one. I mean, he had been to Eton, this guy, and, you know, actually that's absolutely fine, but he'd had a very different background. So, the, you know, that's when you need that, you know, the differences in background. Anyway, I went into stand-up after that, did two stand-up shows that were based on my background and experiences.
Yeah.
And then still was struggling, really, to get in the door with television. You know, the gatekeepers are... does feel often like one breed of person, and it's very hard to get through those doors and get seen and heard. And then eventually the Carolina Hearn came up, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to apply for that, and I did, and that was kind of what helped, really.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it's do you find it's more not just a class thing, it's because you're a woman as well? I'm just because it seems to be
I know things are changing, but well, I think it's a class and woman thing, working class women particularly. I mean, you look at myself, Jade, Fern. You know, we've struggled to kind of push. You have to really push for your place, I find. You know, that group of women. You know, and it's funny the amount of times I'm told, oh well, we've got Fern doing that, or she'll be told, oh well, Sophie's doing that. Or, you know, it's funny they think there's only one place, which I think we're all struggling with that, because you've got to fit one specific identity and be shoehorned in. So it's a very strange thing. Yeah. But I think the great thing was, I mean, it sounds awful, but a couple of years ago, this new rise of the working class came into Edinburgh, and when that rise comes, you know, and then there'd been, you know, a kind of rise of female voices, and then there'd been, obviously, unfortunately, Victoria Wood and Carolina Hearn had passed away that year. And what that did is, in the social consciousness, people were thinking about working class female voices in comedy and that they need to be seen. So for me, I felt that I was able to ride that wave a bit, because finally I had a framework that I could fit into that they could digest. Oh, she's not just a stupid northern woman, or she's not just bubbly or brash or loud or whatever. She's like Carolina Hearn. She's like Victoria Wood, or whatever they need to frame me in a bracket, so that they don't just assume that you're sort of stupid or brash or whatever. Fine. But I felt that that's what, you know, the Carolina Hearn bursary did as well, because it, I could place myself within that framework of someone who'd been before. But it's a bit annoying and unimaginative that you need a framework like that, because, you know, it is different, I think, with men, especially that, you know, educated or middle-class men, and not really ever come to question whether they're funny and smart or not. You know, those questions seem to be specifically for kind of working-class women, really, within comedy.
Yeah, it seems to be you have to prove yourself more because of the stereotypes and the assumptions. As soon as you, even because there's been stuff on TV with male heroin addicts and male sex workers and things like that, and it doesn't seem people, like you say, because it's a woman, it seems people are even more shocked, and you're like, but
yeah,
this is what's happening, and it's what you're doing is what they're doing is reacting to the stereotypes and not really listening to the stories, which is why it's important that people like you are coming through now and telling these stories, but from a different perspective, a real perspective, having been there, you know. And it needs to happen, and it just needs these people to just stand aside and let it happen, rather than, I don't know, just trying to dominate it all the time. You know, they talk about diversity, but they don't go to the black circuit and talk to the comedians there.
Well, I think that's it, isn't it? If you've got like producers who are talking about diversity and going, we need to get a this, you know, and treating people in that tokenistic way, then you'll only ever get tokenism, won't you? You'll never get if you get diverse gatekeepers, then you've got people from different specific backgrounds and experiences who will relate and find the very best of that comedy that relates to their world in a nuanced and honest and funny way. But if you're trying to shoehorn voices in from absolutely no personal experience of that background, how could you possibly, you know, get the best of it, you know, in a way? Yeah. So I think it helps with quality as well as kind of, you know, authenticity, doesn't it? You know, it's both, because I think that is the problem. You know, you've got someone from Eton going, I need to find a black man from Brixton. You know, I mean, it's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's never going to relate.
Yeah. No. And then they go and find a black man that's been to Eton. And you're like, well, all right. Okay, no.
Which is an interesting experience as well in its own right.
Well, God, of course. Like, absolutely. That's another story.
But it's a different experience, isn't it? That's the thing, you know, yeah.
but a real...
Yeah, it is a funny old world.
Yeah. Like, when you see someone like Idris Elba, who's from Hackney, you know, and now you see he's, like, one of the biggest stars on the planet, and he, you know, I was watching a documentary about him, and, you know, he came from where he came from, proper working class, and now he's where he is, and it's, you know, that takes effort, you know? That's...
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have to be that way, you know? It shouldn't have to be. There seems to be more hurdles for working class people. I don't know. Maybe I've got a bit of a chip on my shoulder about it. It's like with these podcasts.
Well, that's the phrase that you told, isn't it? That you've got a chip on your shoulder.
And then
I think what's interesting is what comes off the back of that is actually a kind of introverted. The idea is that the working class have got a chip on their shoulder. So, I mean, I found when I went to Melbourne Comedy Festival, it was incredibly posh, actually, when I thought about everybody's background, really looked, you know, thought, bloody hell, which is fine. But I spent a lot of time trying to prove that I was all right. You know, I'm not going to have a chip on my shoulder. I'm going to be, don't you worry about me. You know, don't you worry. I mean, I may be coming from that background, but don't you worry about me. I'm all right. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, they spend all your time trying to prove that actually what's happened is then you've got the snobbery that's originally there that looks down on the working class, and then working class anger. And then what comes is, oh, don't get you angry. Don't be one of those angry ones. And then actually, it's still the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't really move forward.
That's it. Just because I'm speaking my mind at something that I'm frustrated with, they just go, oh, he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And go, no, I just see what's happening and I don't like it. And I'm speaking my mind about it, you know? So with this podcast, there's always a... award things and this and that and the other. And there was one the other day, and it was this award thing, and it was all very. I'm not knocking middle class people. I mean, producer Paul is one, and I want this to go out. I don't want this to just cut it off.
Always.
Do you know what? I say this every time. If it wasn't for producer Paul, this thing wouldn't be happening. So I don't want to. I'm not knocking him, but. I don't know. It just seemed very middle class, the awards thing in it. And people like to say about this podcast, because it isn't like the BBC. There's no like clipped vowels, and there's no mental health is the jumping off point. And if you listen to what we're saying and the conversations we're having, you can hear that we're talking about our experiences, and then someone listening will go, oh, yeah, that's how we deal with mental health, not by just going, well, these are all the categories of mental health. You know, we're just having conversations, and sometimes because people don't know where to put this, or it's too working class or whatever, they kind of just kind of ignore it a bit, and that frustrates me a little bit because I want people to hear it.
It is frustrating.
Yeah.
And they will as well, because it is fantastic. I mean, and also I do believe that the people... ultimately make the final call. You know, you can have all these critics. Yeah. I mean, I've had said it to Jade before, hadn't I? You know, forget all them reviewers. I mean, they'll get on board eventually. And obviously they did, didn't they, last year? Really got on board and saw for the intelligent, articulate voice she is. But I find sometimes it does take time until you do that one show where they go, oh, we see you straddle both now. Sorry, we've taken a long time to catch up, but we're here. You know, but I think it just takes time for people from that background. It's very frustrating, but I think the positive thing about it is that actually, while it takes you longer, I mean, I felt that I've had to be kind of undeniable in what I've put out. You know, it's had to be undeniably good because I'd never get away with middle of the road. Yeah. Somebody else might be able to get away with that middle road and be considered a genius or whatever. That would never be the case, I don't think, with me. So I've got to put out something that's undeniably good, I think, the best it can be, to get, you know, the basic, oh, she's good, that's good, you know.
And that's
interesting. And I think that for people coming from the working class voice, you know, that it does... Nobody's going to say, oh, Rich reminds me of Daniel Kitson. And, you know, your own voice, it's
exactly.
different.
Exactly,
you know,
you're right. And did you have counselling and things like that? You did, didn't you? You went and had...
I've had loads.
Right.
Yeah, well, when did I first have it? Oh, you'd have to, wouldn't you? I had some in school, actually, because they give you free counselling in school, don't you, if you've got enough going on.
Really?
And then I had one sent me for an assessment, actually, in secondary, because I was really naughty in secondary school, and they sent me for an assessment to see if I had ADHD.
Oh, wow.
They said I didn't. They said I just lack structure or something. I can't remember. It was something daft.
Yeah, yeah. Like you say, you had a lot going on at home, so that was bound to sort of leak into your school life.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't for me, really. school, yeah. You know, I mean, I didn't like the fact that you had to sit down all the time. I'd always had a problem with that. You know, I remember even when I was like 8 years old, they did that to, you know, for a game in class, they did Wink Murder. And they used to do it every Friday as a treat. Oh, I used to find it so boring having to sit with my head. So I used to put a sign up once I'd been killed or whatever, winked at. Instead of, I'd just put a sign up saying dead, and then I'd go off and do whatever I wanted to do. Because I thought, oh, I'm not lying here with my head in my hands for half an hour, you know. So I've never been good at sitting still, which is great, you know, for performers. You're creative, you're on your feet all the time. But it doesn't always fit with the school system, does it? You know, sitting down for an hour, ooh.
I was the same. No. I just wasn't interested in what they were telling me. And my dad said, he goes, you never keep still. He goes, he said, the amount of times I'd be stood in the doorway of the lounge watching the telly, but getting ready to fuck off. And he's like, just sit down or go out, but do one or the other. But yeah, I've always been the same. If I'm around I'm not very academic. And if I'm bored, I can't hide it, you know?
No, I can't, yeah. So is that, were you quite sort of, well, they say it's like ADHD sort of, but I think it's like more of a kinetic learner, isn't it? Were you just a bit more hands-on? Did you do all right at school? How did you get on?
I just left in the end. I don't even know. Yeah. I've lied on so many CVs. I don't know. I really genuinely think I've got an A in chemistry in GCSE, but I definitely haven't. Yeah.
They never check, do they?
No, my school's not even there anymore. So, you know, I could say what
Couldn't
I want.
Couldn't check if they tried. Yeah. Well, I did the same. I mean, I've never... I actually flew off to Corfu with my boyfriend at the time. He'd got a claim in after having an accident on a scooter. Yeah. And we went off to Corfu. So I missed my GCSEs. But this is quite sweet. One of my teachers turned up on my doorstep because I was in a sort of supported housing thing. I'd left home and was in, it's like supported lodging, somewhere between foster care and living independently.
Yeah.
And he turned up at my door and he said, look, I could get sacked for this, but I've snuck a paper out because I really want you to sit your English exam. And I sitted it in my living room. So that, I think I got a D for that. So it wasn't fabulous, but considering I'd not attended for 2 years, I mean, I used to do guest appearances at school, you know. But he was lovely, very sweet man, really.
Yeah, I just did.
But he's not for everybody.
No, I did this, that. Yeah. Again, goes back to what you were saying about some people just don't fit into that framework. I definitely didn't. And the teachers at my school... When I remember it, I'd be just sat there. They gave up on me, and I'd given up on them. There was no animosity. They weren't horrible to me. They were just like, I was just sort of like just seeing the hours out until I could just leave, and I just stopped going. I went and got a job doing removals, and just didn't go back. I tried to get into the sixth form a bit later on, but Mr. Harding, the guy, took me to one side. He went, this is not for you, Rich. He goes, I don't know what is for you, but school is not for you. You're not academic. Just go and find, you know, you're a good lad. You're a good lad, but just go and find something that's you. And that was it. Mm. I just stopped going. And some people are like that. My youngest son's like that. He was shit at school because he just didn't fit in, didn't like it. You know, and that's, I think, but we're not having these conversations. We're just like, you either fit in or you don't. And that's it.
Yeah, they're not open, are they, to like new ways of doing things. It was the same with me. I went to the careers advice and they said, oh, you're very chatty, so maybe you could be a travel agent. That was their advice. You know, where'd you get this stuff from?
Well, you've been at Corfu, so...
Yeah, I know. Well, I should have said that, shouldn't I? But it was mad, you know, and I was in that M1 room, you know, the room where you get sent with the Mars bars and stuff. You know, they give you Mars bars, they don't trouble you, you do your own thing. And I didn't really go in, but I'd pop in occasionally. I'd always wear my own clothes. I once wore knee-high boots to school, and the teacher actually took me out to get some more uniforms. She said, I'm going to buy you some uniform at my own wages because you can't keep coming to school like that, you know. But they just write you off, don't they, and put you in that little room. You know, it's me, naughty kids, and you're off there. I remember once going back, because I went to Bolton College, I did the first diploma, and then I went back with one of the girls who was, she was at my school, and she was in my year, but she was, I suppose, what you call a nerd or whatever. She was just a healthy human being with a good mum and dad, but, you know, you call her a nerd. Anyway, we became really good friends.
Yeah.
We became really good friends in college. And we were walking past Turton, this school we went to, and she said, oh, I'll pop in and say hello to the headmaster. Now, I used to sit with the headmaster, but usually when you've been sent out of a lesson or whatever, you know, and I really liked him. Anyway, I went back in, and they happened to have this big event on. I couldn't believe it. And she knew everybody. She knew the music teacher, the drama teacher. You know, they were having this big presentation. There was kids doing the clarinet. I remember thinking, I did not go to this school. This was completely different. But that school had two things going on. They had the ones for the naughty kids where they kind of just wrote you off. And then they had all these brilliant activities going on for other kids, you know.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting to realise what bracket you'd been in and that there was a whole alternative world available at that school, you know. Quite strange, really, isn't it?
It's mad, isn't it? I don't know. Every time I think, changes must be happening now, and then you see all they're worried about is the numbers, isn't it? They're worried about Ofsted and the numbers and making sure that the school looks good and they're not dealing with individuals and we're all different and, you know, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
But this insane in the fembrane came about because I was talking to Jade and she decided, she goes, you don't know much about women, do you? And I went, no, and I thought I did. And then, so this is where this came about. So I'm basically.
I don't want to ask what context she said that to you in. Let's just.
No, it wasn't. We were on the sofa. We were in front of the telly. It wasn't like.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't in the boudoir halfway through. She's like, you don't know what you're doing.
You don't know much about women. Oh, hang on. I'm sorry to be rude, but a package has just arrived at the front door. Sorry.
That's all right, mate. Yeah, go on.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Just one sec. Oh,
that's all right.
I'll grab it. He's seen me.
Perhaps we could have a live opening on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Find out what it is. That's a good idea. Let's find out.
Right. It might not be for me, though, that's the thing.
Let's open it anyway.
Yeah, let's open it.
Yeah, all right. Let's see who it's for. Sophie Willen, it is for me. Oh, fabulous.
Right, here we go. Let's find out what it is.
Drum roll, please.
Here we go. Woo, a live opening.
Oh my God, it's very boring. I'll tell you what it is. It's flip chart paper.
Oh.
It's sad, but I'm obsessed with this stuff. I love it, honestly. It's the only way I can write me. I need to plan everything out. So when I'm plotting, especially with the series, but even with stand-up shows, I have to get flip chart paper, you know, just have it all out. So I write all the bits, a chapter them all, or if it's scenes or if it's stand-up sections, and I need to have it on the flip chart, and then I'll write up a beat sheet onto A4, and then from there, write it up on the script, each scene headed, and then fill them in. But it starts with the flip chart, so...
Well, that's it, you need to get
I'm
it.
I'm knackered after that.
That's exciting. It's our first live opening.
It's the adrenaline of it all, isn't it?
That's it. I mean, you've ordered it, you know what it is, and yet it's so exciting when it turns up, isn't it?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's like a present from yourself, isn't it? Yeah.
I had ordered a headphone splitter so that two people can listen to something at the same time through their headphones. Yeah, I was over the moon. Over the moon.
Mm. It's amazing what gets you going now, isn't it, in these times?
I love getting stuff to record the podcast because it makes me feel professional. Yeah. It makes me feel like I know what I'm doing, even though it's producer Paul going, you need to get one of these, dickhead. I'm like, oh, yeah.
But it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. I'm stationary. I love having, when you're about to start a new, I know when I was starting like shows for Element, like, getting a new book, so exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the first term of school, isn't it? When you've got all the optimism, when you think, I'm not going to get excluded again, I've got a new pencil case, you know. It's the same with shows.
You
know?
Yeah.
It's a fresh start, isn't it?
It's a fresh start. You're full of optimism. And like you say, I'm going to knuckle down this time. And then a couple of weeks in, you're suspended for
I hadn't thought about is how fucking boring Mrs. Parsons, then. That's what I'm not taking into equation here. I do love a new notepad, though. You know, when you get going, like you say, and you get ready and you put your show title on the front, and then it usually changes about six times, you know. But there's so much excitement, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, I learned early on that to call the show something kind of vague, so you're not trapped in... Because I did that once.
I was trapped in the title of the show, and it had to be about that. And, oh, God. So then I sort of made it a bit more vague, so I could talk about anything, really.
It's tricky, that, isn't it? Because you want to keep it vague, but then also keeping it vague and precise. If you can get that in one title, that's the best, isn't it? Yeah.
Just call it that, vague and precise.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Fembrain. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
I never felt I fitted in. And the more I have conversations with people doing this, I realise no one really feels like they fit in.
It's so true, isn't it?
Yeah. We have this way, like we've already touched upon it, where society says we should learn, we should fit into this framework. And then a lot of our mental health issues come from the fact that we don't fit into that, and we're made to feel like we should. And that's why we're all stressed out, because we feel, oh, shit, I'm wrong. I'm different. I don't fit in. And I don't know if that's how you felt, but it seems to be that people are finding that now. They're like, oh, I don't fit in. I must be weird. I must be wrong. But we're not. We're just different.
Yeah. You see a lot of comedians, I think, who get swallowed up by, why have they got that and I've not? I've not got this because I should have had that. And I, you know, this is because of this. And, you know, and it gets very angry, very political, very personal as well at the same time, and a lot of fighting with it, you know. And I think it's a dangerous slope to go down when you feel like you're the only one being screwed over in your identity bracket, you know.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Absolutely. And I see a lot of, you know, at the moment it seems to be, I mean, I don't know, this, it just seems like men are evil, women have got all the answers, and we're sort of like being pitted against each other by the media. And it's not, I was talking to Ellen Latina about this the other day, and she was saying, no, we're just human beings. We're not, yeah, I'm a woman, you're a man, but that's it. We're very much the same, really. Yet the media are putting us against each other. And I don't know, you know, if you feel, how you feel about that, because we are the same, aren't we?
It's both, isn't it? I think on the one hand, you know, we do need to focus more on what unites us, all of us, you know, and those things. Because you do see the kind of, you know, I feel like the white middle class rage in men is bigger and larger than normal, isn't it? I've noticed. Yeah. But then you can kind of understand in some ways, because you think whenever people feel a loss of displacement or when things are changing quite suddenly and stuff, you know, particularly with women and, you know, new working class women voices and stuff like that, or, you know, lots of different things, that frightens people, and fear can often lead to anger, and, you know, so I think you can understand where all these things come from, can't you? But I think maybe it's trying to find the things that connect you rather than what separates you, isn't it?
Exactly. You know? That's what we what we should be doing. And it, but it just seems we're all focusing, or we're being made to focus on negatives and shutting
and
people down.
And,
yeah, exactly. Whereas, especially now, the way with this virus shit going on, now more than ever, we should be coming together and working together. But I still see people fighting about things, and I'm like, what are you? There's other things to be worried about. Thousands of people are dying every day because of this virus.
Yeah.
And you're,
yeah, I mean, it's terrifying.
And you're still fighting about this bullshit. Come on, man. We should all be coming together, you know, and that's the only way we'll get through this, is if we all come together. You know, I find it frustrating sometimes, you know.
I do. It felt like at moments there's a sense of coming together and unity and love of our NHS and lots of wonderful things, you know. But then I think as things go on and it takes its toll, and then obviously the recession that's going to come off after it, that's a frightening concept, isn't it? Because I think that's when people get very segregated and angry and blaming. Yeah. You know, I think that's always a frightening time, isn't it, when we go into recessions and stuff, you know?
Yeah. And again, it's the people working on the ground that they're the ones that get affected the most, because what's going to happen now is that train companies and travel companies are going to put their fares up because they've been losing money, and you know so we're not going to be able to afford to go to work, and then a lot of people have lost their jobs, and yet at the same time we're getting told by these blustery bags of wind in Westminster, come on, you know, Dunkirk spirit, we'll get through this. You're like, are you fucking kidding? You don't fucking know what you're talking about, mate. We're the ones that are going to be affected, and yet we're the ones that are still fighting with each other.
Always the way of it, isn't it? You know, it's like they set us up and then fight amongst each other. I mean, I found that particular time with David Cameron was the worst time for kind of pitting working class people against each other. And it's like, you know, who's on welfare? He's getting that. He shouldn't be on that. Well, he's not on that. You know, the benefit shaming, the class shaming, immigration shaming, all these horrible things, you know, the racism, you know, all these things were coming up that I just... You know, and that's what you get afterwards. And I mean, you know, I felt Cameron was awful for it. The whole culture at that time for me was, you know, very, you know, institutional as well. You know, you've got to, Britain's Got Talent. Simon Cowell was lauded at that time. I remember watching Britain's Got Talent, and, you know, you're getting people come on who are clearly vulnerable people.
Yeah.
You know, who are getting laughed at in an arena full of people, like some sort of freak show from the 19th, from the 1700s or something.
Yeah.
So what's Jade up to? Is she mincing around in the background then, just chirping in, saying derogatory things and leaving the room?
she gets all fired up and she'll blurt something out and then she'll fuck off again. Where are you? She's hiding somewhere. I don't know where she is. She's in the kitchen. Hang on. What? She's making food for herself. She's tidying our bedroom.
Fabulous.
It's a pigsty. Are you not tidying the room? No, she's been sitting on her ass.
Hey, I tell you what, I'd love one of them cocktails she whips up. They look fabulous.
Oh, we love a cocktail in this house. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's been a few messages going, what's that? So, that's what we've been doing. I tell you what, because Jade has been very hands-on with that. She's been, like, making kombucha, and she's been making cocktails, and she's been getting stuck in, whereas I haven't. And it's just because she loves doing it, and she's really good at it. And I sort of sit in the corner, just making the most, going, I'm loving this. But it sounds sexist.
Well,
the thing is,
you only need one chef, don't you? I mean, the other person has got to be letting them know how all the flavours are. That's a very important job, Rich, that you're taking on there, you know.
I mean, I do my bit of cooking and cleaning and things like that, but the way I'm saying it now, like, she's in the kitchen and I'm just sat twiddling my thumbs.
No, but she's hardly like a submissive housewife. It's more like a sort of chef, isn't it? It's a different lead.
Yes, it's because Jade has decided she's going to cook. There's nothing submissive about Jade Adams. And sometimes the old chauvinist in me finds that hard to deal with. You know, you go,
it's a different dynamic.
No, you're pressed. Oh, I thought she was going to come and say something then. You all right? Do you want to say hello?
I've said hello.
Oh, hello.
I've looked her on WhatsApp.
All right, then. Thanks,
hello. She's off.
How does Jade, because you're, Johnny has got you because you're, you know, because you're, you get stuck in and you're a strong woman. And how does your, how does Johnny find that? Is he, because he's quite chilled out?
I think he flicks. Well, what we're realizing is he's not as chilled out as we thought, actually. He's quietly neurotic.
Oh, shit, right.
This is the thing, you know, you think, oh, he's dead chilled, but actually, it's all bubbling under the surface with John. Do you know what I mean? So that's been interesting for him to realise about himself as well, actually, as time's gone on, because he's doing therapy as well. So, you know, it's all very millennial. We do our therapy and we sit and chat about it afterwards. I mean, you can't get more millennial than that, can you? Really? So he's working out that he's got... Well, what we worked out with my therapist, God, I sound so millennial, is that we're both opposite ends of the same spectrum.
All right.
So we just basically... He's quite disassociative, and now I can't remember if it said ambivalent now or something like that, where I'm kind of hyperactive, hyper-aroused, hyper-vigilant state, and he's more disassociative, distractive. But it comes from the same core of anxiety, actually. We have the same sort of core, or the same response to different things, but just in a different form.
Yeah.
So it's a funny one, isn't it? You know, the quiet ones, or the ones who seem chilled... They're usually mental when you get beneath the surface, I tell you.
And I think because...
Oh, you can't say that word now, can you? Disclaimer. Got to be careful now. Apparently it's a derogatory word, you know.
What, calling someone mental?
Yeah, but then I think, well, you know, these words, like, you know, they make things more universal and more accessible, actually, in the reality sometimes. It's a funny one, isn't it, between what is derogatory and what is actually... personable and human as well, you know.
Exactly. And sometimes, like, you know, Jade stood there, we've been arguing, she'd go, "You're fucking mental." And then you go away and you go, "Yeah, I am fucking mental." I think in this situation, well, everything's amplified, isn't it? So we're all shining a light on our idiosyncrasies. God, and our, you know, and I realised today I'm putting all my energy and anger and shit into cleaning. So I'm becoming obsessed with the cleanliness.
Great.
Where... I tell you what,
there's nothing better than an angry cleaner, though.
But it gets to a point, but you don't want to get to a point where, you know, someone puts a cup down, they just finished it, and you're like, and you grab it and put it straight in the sink. No one wants that prick around, so it's fine.
I know, but Rich, that's me as well, so I completely relate to you, because I'm the same. I'm incredibly controlling when it comes... I think what it is as well is it's a way to control your own inner chaos, isn't it? You know, if you quite, you know, there's stuff going on, or you've had a chaotic different things going on, you can be quite hyper vigilant about mess, you know, or try and control your environment so it feels stable and calm and tidy. Stableness, you know, they make you feel like you're calmer and more stable in yourself. May not be true, but you know, I'm the same. I need spaces to be clean. Me and Johnny are staying at his parents now permanently. We're living in the attic at the minute.
Oh, are you?
I just absolutely cleaned the attic out the other day. I cleaned all the paperwork and, you know, put everything in place. And it looks fabulous. I brought them up for a tour of the parents yesterday. And it was like changing rooms, you know. They were like, "My God, we can't believe the space. We've not seen the floor for 10 years, you know." But for me, I just had to do it, because there's no way I could stay in that space and keep my mental health afloat with mesh, you see. I mean, there's a real trigger for me. So I really relate. Is it the same for you? Yeah.
I have to have it. Before I do anything, I just have to have everything tidy and away, and then I can focus on what I'm doing. Because I can't. Otherwise, it bothers me that things are things are untidy and not clean, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be that bad. I don't know.
I mean, the difficult thing is, I'm the same with Johnny. He's very messy. I'm over-controllingly tidy, you might say.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I think what happens is you'd like to meet in the middle, but actually, what happens is you end up both. Making each other worse, you know, because his messiness makes me more intensely controlling about tidiness, and then my controllingness about tidiness makes him more messy. So it actually they exacerbate each other.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now you're just banging up against each other instead of just, I don't know what the answer is, but and then you get to a point you go, "Well, I'm not fucking giving in. I'm not giving in. I'm not having it." And then and then you end up banging up. Yeah, and then you got to work out, like. Michael Smiley said this. He was saying, "Like, do you want to be right, or do you want to be happy?" And that's the difference, isn't it? You know? You don't.
But can we be happy in mess? That's the thing.
No, I don't want to be happy in mess. If I don't clear up or say something, I'll end up. I don't know what. I'll end up going mad.
We'll get a cleaner.
It's not the option to get a cleaner. Put your fucking socks away.
Honestly, this is us too. It's really funny, but it's funny and it's in the reverse as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We are very much the opposite of each of, yes, it's the same thing going on. And it, yeah.
I feel angry with Johnny sometimes. Like, I sent him a really angry WhatsApp message last year about, I took a picture of it because it was so ridiculous. I thought, do you know what? I need to make an effort to be better because I was furious about the pens. You know, I sent him a really aggressive WhatsApp message in the middle of a nice day, you know, being like, just so you know, I've tried 6 fucking pens. Not one has a lead that's not been chewed. You know, it was this really big rant about
Oh, my God. It's the same.
But I was furious. Yeah, I was furious about the pens. And then I had to take a minute and think, you know, there's bigger fish to fry, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just realised that, yeah, there's other things to worry about. I know. Mm. I'm talking to you as much as I'm talking to myself. Because I take it too personally, and it isn't an attack. I know it's not. That
did you have people who were critical about things? Because I think if you've had somebody who's been critical, I don't know. Did you have anybody in your home?
Yeah, well, I've lived in places, and I remember living in Maidstone in Kent, and the washing up would be stacked in the sink for weeks. And no one ever go near it. And then it would take, we'd have like one blast through it, but it was a fucking mess. So I don't know.
Maybe that's why you're so frightened of mess then, because of those pots.
I don't know what my fucking problem is. I need to sort myself out though.
Well, you just need to meet in the middle, you two, don't you? As do me and Johnny. We just all need to be more patient with each other's. And it's a two-way street, patience, isn't it? You know, people have to be patient with our cleanliness needs and also appreciate the tidiness. It does help being appreciated, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
But then also we have to be, you know, patient and appreciative of actually there's something nice about being a bit more liberated and not being, you know, emotionally imprisoned by a towel on the floor, you know.
So, I know. I got to stop taking it personally and thinking that it's all everyone's having a go at me. When it's not. Just chill out, man. I just got to chill out. That's it, isn't it? I think that's what we should all be doing. We should all be chilling out and being a little bit more empathetic and understanding, you know. And that's
chill the fuck out, yeah.
Chill the fuck out, mate.
Yeah.
So when is your? So you've had the pilot out of. You had the pilot out. And
yeah.
That was very well received.
Had the pilot out. Well, do you know what's great on the subject we were talking about? You know, about the thing about feeling that it doesn't get noticed by the critics. So, you know, you were saying about the podcast awards and it being. The great thing is when you keep plodding on, you keep going, eventually you'll get those critics because they do have to come around. They have to. And then you have the people and the critics, because I tell you what happens with the people who are often considered cool and in the critic's choice or whatever. They very rarely get the people first.
True.
You know, and actually, if you get the people first and then the critics, that's the best. And that's what I was pleased with Alma's Not Normal is... It had both, it straddled both, because actually the people always came first with the work anyway, you know, and that was the lucky thing about it, you know.
Yeah,
so I think probably be the same with your podcast, won't it? And just
I think that
is the beauty with the working class voices, is actually they do resonate with people first and then critic stuff come later, you know.
Yeah, you're right, because the amount of the messages I get from people regarding this podcast and is so, it blows me away how the people love it and they love listening to it and they love the interaction I don't know why I worry about the other thing, because the people love it and that's what's more important, and I should again chill the fuck out and just
that should be your mantra then for this lockdown.
That's it, yeah we're doing that, yeah. Rich Wilson chills the fuck out. This has been lovely though, Sophie. I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, you too.
Where can we find you, mate, online and all that?
On Instagram, I'm doing little videos every 3 days, just on my updates on where I'm at with the writing process. And I'm responding to people's questions as well. So people have been asking me about my career journey. So I've been kind of going through that chronologically. And then I'm sharing updates of the writing process. When we go into pre-production, I'm going to take people behind the scenes and show them that. And then on set, I'm going to do some behind the scenes stuff there. So Instagram and Facebook's probably the best place to find me at the minute while I'm cracking on. And then check out the pilot on BBC iPlayer.
Brilliant. And it is brilliant. I'm going to tell you that now. It's excellent.
Oh, thank excellent. You.
I don't know about you. I don't know about the other woman that's in it, but you smash it, mate.
The other woman you live with, just to be clear, Jane Adams.
My beloved.
Beloved for now until she leaves a pair of socks on the floor. Yeah.
a wet towel in the bed again.
God, yeah.
Been lovely. This has been lovely. Thanks, Sophie. Oh,
you too. Take care.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
I'm Amy.
I'm Louise.
Join us for your next episode.
And today, personally, I'm completely overexcited to be in the home of Arabella Weir.
My mother, on her deathbed, literally goes, "Have you any idea how fattening mayonnaise is?"
God.
And I went, "Mum, you're dying." And she went, "Yes, but you're eating mayonnaise." And I went, "Well, we both know which you think is worse."
We're at the news building, home of the Times and the Sunday Times, to interview Lorraine Candy.
She just looked at me, my eldest, and said, "What would you know about fashion?"
Oh, God.
Literally my job. For the last 30 years.
Oh, wow.
God. Join us for your next episode.
By your favourite podcast app.
Thank you for contributing to the conversation as well, because your podcast is great, and I listen to it on the way to work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.